Our speaker today is Sarah Garner. Sarah is a long-term leading member of Socialist Alternative. She's part of our national executive and our national student coordinator as well. She's a student activist out at Melbourne University, and she'll speak for probably half an hour or so, and then we'll open it up for discussion for everyone. So please make Sarah welcome.
I want to just begin this fine morning, the third morning of the annual Marxism conference, with a video from Sudan a few days ago. This is the Sudanese revolutionaries chanting good morning over and over and over again in the streets. The lights are too bright, so you can't really see their faces, but these are faces of total euphoria, the kind of experience no one has ever had in the morning outside of a revolution. And I think that, you know, that is the first case for why we want to build a socialist alternative, that we want to kind of see these kind of scenes on every street in every country in the world. I'll leave that there, but... Oh, no, actually, I'll keep it going. It's very beautiful. Can you guys see it or not? Cool. So that is presumably going on every morning. Can we turn this off?
Hey, Mikey.
Mikey. Whose Facebook is it? So you should join to help our tech team resolve embarrassing issues like that at next year's Marxism conference. But to turn to the question of why we need a socialist alternative in Australia, I think that, you know, we've talked a lot at this conference about the atrocities going on across capitalism globally and also the resistance to those atrocities, and that's all really important. But also it's in our country, in Australia, that a socialist alternative is desperately needed. And there are all sorts of horrific stats about the fact that the minimum wage hasn't risen in 30 years, that New Start payments haven't risen in 25, all of these kind of things that point to the vast inequality, class inequality, that exists in Australian society, and that's only getting worse. But I think that one sort of episode really says why we need a political alternative and a socialist alternative in Australia as good as any other. And that was something that happened on day two of the federal election campaign. People might have or might not have noticed that we're in a federal election campaign. It's, you know, charged with essential political questions and political differences between the two major parties. And on the second day of this important transformative campaign, there was a meeting held in a gaudy mansion out in Kew. For people who are not from Melbourne, that's one of the real rich kind of Liberal Party strongholds in Melbourne. And it was a meeting between two individuals just getting together, their old mates. They've been on private jets together around the world before. They regularly catch up. And they're just getting together to talk about, you know, their plans for society, how they want to shape it, and so on. And these two individuals were Anthony Pratt, the young, inspiring prodigy, the son of Dick Pratt, who is the richest. Anthony Pratt is now the richest man in Australia. And the man who was visiting him was Bill Shorten, the leader of the opposition. And the figure who ostensibly is supposed to be standing up to the years of Liberal Party filth that working class people have been served up in this country, supposed to be standing up to the years of neoliberalism, supposed to be standing up to the interests of the business class that are represented by the Liberal government. But here he was making his allegiances very clear wining and dining with his good mate on the second day of the federal election campaign. I think the other thing that this episode demonstrates, apart from the absolute paucity of political opposition that exists in this country, is the absolute lie that the capitalist class have any entitlement to their wealth, their prestige, their position. And this lie is often justified on the basis of presenting the rich and powerful as somehow clever entrepreneurs who have done some creative good to society, have advanced us, you know, have contributed to human betterment because they've used their wealth and their intellect to come up with new products for us all to enjoy. Anthony Pratt is the richest man in Australia because he has inherited a company which is the largest cardboard box company in the world. This is what makes you the owner of $12.9 billion, the person who didn't think up cardboard boxes. That person has some talent, certainly doesn't put together cardboard boxes, but has billions and billions of dollars simply because he controls the means of production that produce this boring, banal commodity, cardboard boxes. That's what constitutes the geniuses at the top of our society. And I think it says a lot about how profoundly we need to transform our society to ever get any kind of justice. Apart from that as well, it's worth saying that the Pratts have historically been absolutely vicious union busters and just recently actually sacked a number of workers who were their union delegates. Those workers are actually members of one of the unions that Bill Shorten used to sit the top of. So it is a pretty comprehensive betrayal of the working class by him. I think that we need a socialist alternative, and it's been talked about a lot at this conference what that socialist alternative would look like. We don't want to see just a couple of reforms. We want to see actually a transformation of society that means that the whole economy and every political decision is democratically decided upon by the masses themselves. So we want to see workers' power, and then we want to see actually a classless society where people can live in a collective, egalitarian way without any class divisions, hierarchies, authorities based on economic inequality, and so on. But I think to be for that socialist alternative is not enough, because it doesn't just exist as some abstract model that we have to believe in our hearts and kind of, pray to, talk about within ourselves sometimes, whatever. We actually have to fight for a socialist alternative. And being for a socialist alternative doesn't mean having this model in your head of what socialism looks like. It actually means making an active intervention into the real world. It means providing a socialist alternative at every moment that's possible, at every moment that capitalism serves us an atrocity, an injustice, a wrong that we can right. We need to be putting forward socialist politics. We need to be making a socialist intervention in that moment. And that, I think, is what it means to actually be for building a socialist alternative. And I think that's only possible to make those living interventions into struggles, to actually take a stand against capitalism, not just in the abstract sense, but in the moment. The only way that's possible is to be part of an organisation that actually wants to do that. Individuals simply cannot change the world on their own, but organisations, groups of people, can do that. And Marx recognised the need for an organisation very early on, and he wrote that the communists fight for the attainment of the immediate aims, for the enforcement of the momentary interests of the working class. But in the moment of the present, they also always represent and take care of the future of that movement. I think that is a really important statement about what is important about organisations today. And organisations exist to connect up like-minded activists, people who share the same vision of what the world should look like and want to be able to do something about that. And they link them up in the socialist movement in a democratic way. We need to be part of forums, meetings, organisations that actually we can discuss with one another, debate out our analysis of the world we're living in, but also the strategies to try and intervene into it in a socialist way. And so I think Socialist Alternative is that organisation in Australia. It is an organisation that has hundreds of activists across the country, We have activist clubs on every major campus across Australia. We have branches in every city, and all of those branches meet very regularly, are involved in a number of campaigns, and bring together those networks of activists who would otherwise just be atomised individuals into the same space to discuss and collectively work out how to intervene as socialists in the world. So to talk a little bit about what that looks like, I wanted to give a couple of examples of what Socialist Alternative has done just in the last few months. So one of the things that's been talked about a bit at this conference is the fire that happened in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. This was toxic chemicals being stored in a warehouse. The mainstream media reported this fire because it was hard to ignore. There was smoke covering half of Melbourne. But not one single mainstream media outlet reported that this was not just a warehouse, an empty, abandoned warehouse, but a warehouse filled with workers, workers who were Tamil refugees as well, who had been oppressed by our government, had been refused access to decent work conditions, and then had been taken advantage of by a particularly malicious set of bosses. And one of those workers, as a result of the explosion, was lying in a coma throughout the entire period that the smoke clouded over Melbourne. And, you know, millions of other working class people were exposed to those fumes. So when we have built up union connections over a long period of time. Socialist Alternative members are part of a whole series of workplaces, obviously, and because of that are part of unions. And wherever we are in our workplaces, we're trying to find other people to join the unions, to push back against the bosses, to sometimes organise strikes, but sometimes just organise, you know, more sort of just defiance throughout the daily experience of being exploited by your boss, more collective solidarity amongst workers and so on. There's been a few stories of that at this conference. The Ipsos call centre that was unionised by our members, there was a workshop on that, a panel on that yesterday, which I heard was brilliant. But it's this process of building connections within our workplaces as unionists and fighting for a set of politics in that way that meant that we already knew some of the workers who worked at this warehouse. And we were able to talk to them, talk to the union delegates, and to go and visit those workers, send a reporter to go and get the story and actually publish the story of working class oppression that was at the heart of this injustice in Red Flag, our national newspaper. And I think that is an important example of a small but a key kind of contribution that we can make to actually, you know, exposing one of the injustices of capitalism. And since then, we have been able to provide workers from that workforce a bunch of different platforms to speak about the situation they face there and so on in at big mass meetings in Melbourne and that kind of thing. Another example I want to give of the kind of activist intervention that we make as an organisation in the here and now is around the question of the environment. This is a question that is just so huge for so many people today, and rightly so, that, you know, reports published that there could be changes that are irreparable in 12 years, that we could be on the way to the apocalypse and so on, this kind of absolute doomsday reporting that is terrifying because this is all the product of capitalism. Capitalism, its hungry desire for profit over profit over profit at the expense of our very planet, let alone humanity, has led us to this situation. But I think socialists have played an important role, not just in this country, but around the world, in saying we can't respond to this with just defeatism, just kind of, you know, being scared to get up in the morning. We have to go out and fight. And so us in Socialist Alternative, as soon as we, you know, sort of black many around the rest of the world, sort of recognised the power of the young woman Greta and her, you know, speaking truth to power about the nature of climate change and capitalism, that sort of elicited a call for global action around standing up against profiteering over the environment. And we in Socialist Alternative jumped on that and helped to organise the nationwide climate strikes that happened just a month ago. So on every single one of our university campuses and all of our high school students, we launched ourselves into organising collective, trying to collaborate with other people outside of the socialist movement to make those demonstrations as big as possible. And they were huge. They were the biggest student demonstrations we've seen in this country for something like 20 years. So that is a really important thing because actually giving people some sense of hope that there is some collective challenge to what's going on with climate disaster is key going forwards. And I think it's key, especially in this country, that we are giving an activist voice to the climate movement, because so many figures within our political class are just so dedicated to the coal industry and to continuing this horrific abuse of the planet. So, you know, we have a Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, who literally brought a lump of coal into Parliament to demonstrate his allegiances. Of course, it was lacquered, so he wouldn't get his hands dirty. He would never touch a lump of coal in his life. But, you know, this, I think, really represents the absolute sort of strident insistence by those at the top on keeping that business going. And so continuing to fight things like the Adani coal mine are pretty critical for us. I think another example of an initiative that can be taken in the moment by an organisation of people that already exists is the mass protest that we were able to organise in response to the horrific racist terror that was the Christchurch massacre. 50 Muslims gunned down through sheer racist hatred was the culmination of years and years of Islamophobia. It was a moment of shock for millions of people, though, and there needed to be an urgent response. And so we, in every city, organised demonstrations to get people out to say we won't stand for Islamophobia. And that's really important. At moments like that, the direction that people's consciousness and sentiment goes in can be very, very different depending on what kind of responses are organised on the ground. So Muslims who came to the protest in Melbourne, a representative of the Muslim Council of Victoria, said he was just overwhelmed with joy, which he was not expecting, and that to be an emotion he felt, because for the couple of days immediately after the massacre, he was just sure that the response would be an entrenchment of the racism that had led to the episode in the first place, an entrenchment of the fear that Muslim people feel just walking down the streets, going to their mosques and so on. And to see the opposite occur, to actually see people respond with defiance, Muslims and non-Muslims march down the streets in their thousands, was a really, really important response that didn't just organically happen, had to be organised to stand up to that racism. We also organise actions against Islamophobia in response to Christchurch on every single campus and tried to get students involved in that movement. And I think that something about the Christchurch episode is important to talk about as well, because socialist organisations do not just exist to respond, to initiate things that happen instantaneously and then we just jump into action. Actually, as Marx kind of talked about in that quote, there's a whole bunch of preparation that goes into being able to be politically ready to organise things like mass demonstrations against the Christchurch massacre that happens years and years in advance of those moments. So one thing that I think you know, socialists should be very proud of is being actually having been sometimes one of the only voices on the broad left that has stood up against Islamophobia. It seems unlikely now, but years ago, whole sections of the rest of the sort of broader, softer left refused to accept that Islamophobia was a form of racism. Apart from the silly academic notion of this is not racism because it's a religion, there was also just this argument of, you know, there is something wrong, you know, with these people. We do need to de-radicalise Muslims and so on. And, you know, we shouldn't go too far. We shouldn't have racist tropes, but we do need to be sensitive to all of that. Whereas it was our organisation that said every single piece of anti-terror legislation is in aid of imperialism, is in aid of a racist persecution campaign against these people, and we stand unequivocally on their sides. We do not call for them to be more moderate. We do not call for them to shut up and stop complaining about Western imperialism. We call for Muslims to be supported, defended, and we try to organise political movements about Islam, you know, fighting back against Islamophobia. And in the course of that, we made a series of connections with the most left-wing sections of the Muslim community that then enabled us as well to be the people who could organise those demonstrations when Christchurch happened. Another thing that is integrated into the Christchurch thing is that we've also been organising for the last few years very seriously against the far right. And that just hasn't been a sort of like mindless activist operation. That's also been a very important political intervention. And that was important in then understanding what the shooter represented, the movement that he emerges from and what needs to be done in response to that movement. So we have recognised for a long time that the far right needs to be fought. It will not be defeated in academic debate. It will not be defeated by conceding certain points of, oh, they have a reasonable argument here about this or that group of people should be scared about immigrants. No concessions should be made to fascist politics. No debates should be had with fascists. Fascists should be confronted with counter-mobilisations of the left, with people who want to stand up against racism. And so to that end, we have, in Melbourne, we played the key role in initiating a campaign collective called Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, CARF, which has been the organisation that has called demonstrations against Milo Yiannopoulos, against every fascist that has visited Melbourne, in defence of the African community when they were being persecuted by the Victorian government, and all of that was important in then having the infrastructure to be able to, again, call the demonstration thousands strong in response to Christchurch. And at that demonstration, we had figures from the trade union movement, the head of it here in Victoria, the head of the Greens, speaking at that demonstration. And it's important that we could collaborate with those other more right-wing organisations for that moment of coming together in solidarity. But it's also important to recognise that none of those organisations were part of standing up against Islamophobia or the far right in the lead up to that. None of those organisations had taken a clear stance against Fraser Anning, who did not actually make his most grotesque speech in the aftermath of Christchurch. He made his most grotesque speech the day that he was inducted to Parliament. It was a clear fascist speech, and he was not roundly denounced. He was not called to be pushed out and so on, except by us. So socialist alternative, though, is not just about activist interventions and then kind of providing political arguments for those. We also have a whole set of politics and principles that need to be argued and thought through and discussed, and that we need to convince more people of. And one of the, key things that informs those politics and those principles is our unwavering support for the oppressed at all times, that we support the oppressed in all of the ways that they fight back, because we recognise that resistance is crucial to actually our end goal of seeing a socialist society in which none of the oppression and injustice that we see today occurs. And I think that there are a whole series of positions that come from that. One that I wanted to mention was our support for open borders. This is a very radical position. I think it is a very important position, that we, as socialists, have a case to argue that our world should not be divided by borders, that there is nothing that means that because you were born on a particular patch of dirt, you should not have the same access to another patch of dirt as some other person, and that borders exist under capitalism to terrify, humiliate, and control people and nothing else. There is nothing natural about them. There is nothing cultural about them. There is nothing pragmatic about them in terms of just organising people and so on. And the society we live in today that kills people with its borders is one that needs to be teared down, and all of those borders are with it. And so I think that recognising that no human being should be treated... Actually, borders treat human beings worse than commodities these days. Commodities can travel across borders freely. Human beings cannot. One example I always remember vividly is a group of refugees having to hide themselves in commodity container ships in order to pretend that they are just like a cardboard box or something, because that was actually the safe passage. Like, pretending to be an inanimate object is a safe passage across the border, but being a human being is not. So we need to tear down those borders. And that's linked to a vision of socialism because it's linked to who we identify with and the world we want to build. And I wanted to read a quote from a socialist, Eugene Debs, from America, which I think sums this up nicely. He said, "I have no country to fight for. My country is the earth. I'm a citizen of the world. While there's a lower class, I am in it. While there's a criminal element, I am of it. While there is a soul of prison, I am not free. The most heroic word in all languages is revolution." And I think that is an important sentiment. We are internationalists. We're for a revolution that will liberate the whole of humanity. But we also recognise that our politics and our principles derive also from our strategy, not just our vision, but our strategy of how to get to socialism. It's actually drawing links between different oppressed people. It's standing up for the cause of every oppressed group that fosters the kind of unity and the kind of movements that will be necessary to tear this system down. And I think that in a context where socialism as a concept in a broad way is making a revival, it's really important for us to have an organisation that argues through what socialism actually means and what the strategy to get there actually is. So when we talk about socialism, we are for a classless society. We are for a society free from markets, free from exploitation, free from oppression. And we are for, I think, the only strategy that will take us there, which is the mass revolutionary movement of the majority of people to create that society. And that is not a vision that's shared by every single figure who calls themselves a socialist in the world today. It's important that socialism, in a generic way, it has made a return. It's much better that people identify with the vague notion of socialism, obviously, than capitalism. And to live in a time right now where over 50% of young people in this country say that they prefer socialism to capitalism is absolutely wonderful. But it's actually up to us, precisely at that important juncture, to provide some clear content to what that actually means. What is the critical differences between a socialist vision that's just about establishing some reforms like Sweden and what's our vision of actual genuine human emancipation. So having an organisation that can not just get out there and be activists, but have serious meetings, reading groups, discussions of history, discussions of theory, is all about providing content to what that socialist future will look like, and then finding ways to integrate that into the movements of the now as well. Okay, so basically being a socialist in Socialist Alternative is about constantly battling for our ideas. It's about constantly finding ways to push forward movements. And all of that, whether we win particular movements or not, all of that is preparation, I think, for the future. And so our basic strategy has to be capitalism will never be defeated if there's no prehistory to such a movement. There is always a history to that revolution in Sudan, to every moment of resistance. There was organisation beforehand. And so our strategy today has to be that every single flame of resistance, every single flicker of resistance, we want to fan the fuck out of that. We want to raise that as high as we can, because as the larger a particular movement can grow, the more lessons can be learnt out of it, the more confidence can be built out of it, and the more we prepare for that future. So all of this means today, for people in this room, a few things. Firstly, it means that in an organisation dedicated to doing the things I've outlined, everyone has a role to play. This is not the type of organisation that is a top-down kind of, apparatus where, come and listen to a few speeches at a Marxism conference once a year. This is an organisation that necessitates activists everywhere across the country, on every campus, in every workplace, getting together, discussing how we do things. There are roles for everyone within this organisation. Everyone, I think, can make time for socialist politics. Capitalist life is hectic. That's why people hate mornings, because every morning you wake up and you think of all the annoying things you have to do, all of the degrading things that will happen to you, how tired you are, and so on. But that is just a truth under capitalism, and it's not one that's going to be resolved before the revolution. It's only going to be resolved when we're all out there singing good morning to each other, feeling happy, feeling like we don't have to go to work, and so on. And so finding a way to make time, everyone has a different sort of schedule and so on, is actually really important. It's a political question, and I think it's one that people should try to resolve. And I think the other thing is that people should know that in joining Socialist Alternative, this is not a request for people to suddenly be some perfect revolutionary. No single person who's ever been part of a socialist organisation has, been perfect at understanding the politics, understanding how you would intervene in a particular moment, organising their life around that. It's not a perfect thing. It's not something that will just, one day you'll wake up and you'll be fully equipped. It's something that you just learn on the job through the struggles, through working together with your comrades and so on. So I think all of, those concerns that I just outlined, all of those are trivial, actually, in the face of the fact that socialist politics will only be kept alive, recreated, and pushed forwards in society if there are organisations of human beings to do that pushing. Capitalism is only kept alive, after all, because our movements at the moment are too weak, much too weak, to tear it down. And one of the most, motivating in a really heart-wrenching way examples of that for me was last year when Behrouz Bichani, I think it was the year before, end of the year before, Behrouz Bichani and the refugees in Manus Island were being dealt another disgusting blow by the Australian government. They were being shifted to a facility where they were going to be opened up to all sorts of vigilante violence. And they were protesting in their camp. They were on hunger strike. They were barricading themselves in their camp, all 600 of them, fighting for their lives. And they knew in that moment that they didn't have the social power to change the decision of our government. And they made a statement that they broadcast, that Behrouz sent as far as he could, saying, please, please, activists in Australia, raise a movement big enough to tear these fucking walls down, to tear these prisons down. Please, you're the only ones who can do it. You have a power against your government. We have nothing. We're on a tropical island behind bars. We have nothing. Please, can you do this? And we couldn't. We did not have the people power. We had demonstrations of thousands of people, and it wasn't enough. And actually fighting for a moment where we can build struggle, that's not the revolution. That's a winnable demand. And that's something that if we fight for a larger anti-racist movement, more pro-refugee politics, a saner kind of society, if we go out there and build all of those movements, hopefully the next time a call like that is made, we can answer it.